Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It's the war. It's the economy. It's healthcare. This trinity of campaign issues has now been repeated so many times that we assume that the order and the distinction of the three are fixed. But who really separates what they pay for healthcare from how they're doing economically? According to what we know, people either have no health insurance, in which case they live with the fear that one disease, one complication could ruin them, physically or financially, or people who do have insurance are watching the cost of their coverage go up while the quality of that coverage goes down and wondering where it will end. John Kerry says it could end with his election in November.
We're going to stop being the only industrial nation on the face of this planet that doesn't understand healthcare is not a privilege for the elected and the connected or the wealthy. It is a right for every single American, and we're going to make it available to all Americans, affordable, accessible.
President Bush brings a more pragmatic, market-based approach to the health care debate.
Congress should give lower-income Americans refundable tax credits to help them purchase health insurance. These tax credits would total up to $1,000 for individuals and $3,000 for families. For many Americans lacking health insurance, these credits would make the difference between affording insurance and going without.
So here's the question. Are the candidates serious about fixing health care? Are they talking about what's important to you? And is this just a matter for the uninsured or everyone else as well? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're going to start today in Indianapolis, Indiana. Tom Volk is joining us from a studio there. He owns two small companies, Ohio Belting and Transmission in Toledo, Ohio, and Racer Parts Wholesale and Specialty Sales in Indianapolis. Tom, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome, Dick. Good morning.
I guess you probably need a race car to make it from one business to the other.
the police wouldn't keep up with that very well between Toledo and Indianapolis.
I guess not.
It has definitely been a challenge the last few years.
How is business?
Business in the industrial sector remains slow in the Midwest, which is what Ohio Belting serves. We're in about our fourth year of very difficult times with a lot of customer bankruptcies and pressures on our sales and profitability. And the healthcare has been the major healthcare cost has been a major problem for us.
So you do offer healthcare to your employees, right?
Yes, I've owned the business since 1982, and one of the things that as a small businessman I really enjoy is being able to have healthcare for my employees and good benefits. So that's been an important part of the business, and I think I represent a lot of small business guys.
Can you give me an example of how much your own costs have changed to provide health insurance for an employee, say, from, I don't know, about 4 or 5 years ago to today?
That's when the increase started going up geometrically every year. Which coincides with our business going sour because of the economy. But we've had 30% and 40% premium increases every year for about 3 or 4 straight years, which we can't afford. So we've had to take a quality of coverage decreases every year and still end up with big increases. So it's our actual out-of-pocket's probably doubled while our health care has gone to basically what we have now is catastrophic.
Does that mean that at some point in the past few years there have been some big claims from Ohio Belting and the insurance companies are going, oh, geez, you know, I don't know what to do business with this guy?
Well, when you ask them the question, they tell you they can't give you the information. But about 5 or 6 years ago, we did have a couple of claims, and we're a relatively small group, about 10 people. But in the last 3-4 years that have seen these 40%+ increases, we have not had any claims. So it's been really difficult to meet with them and try to get an explanation. Basically, they're doing it because they can.
You listened along with the rest of us, Tom, to the kinds of lines that the political leaders have and are carrying in this particular campaign. When they're talking about their own ideas for health care, are they talking about the issues that you think are important that could fix the problem?
No. The problem with the candidates in all healthcare discussion is based on who's going to pay money. The government should pay more.
Right.
Individuals should pay more. And the problem is I think we need to focus on where's the money going. I think we're seeing an escalating cost of healthcare without an increase. In fact, it's worse healthcare than we had a few years ago. So it seems that there's a lot of money going into the system that isn't ending up in healthcare.
This is the idea that there's too many middlemen in the system?
There's a lot of people that are involved in this that are not well known, unless you're in the position I am of trying to shop and pay for insurance. There's a lot of intermediaries and brokers, and there's a lot of healthcare administration going on that is taking a lot of money out of the system. So from where I sit, and I've met with the administrative people to try to talk about it, the administration of healthcare is where the issue is. It's not necessarily the healthcare, but the net effect to me is we're at $1,000 a month for family coverage. And that's not very, that's no drug care. And basically, I think I figured out I'd be out about $20,000 before I collected a dime on insurance.
So as the employer, you go to an agent, and he or she goes to a broker, and then they go to an insurance company, and they go to the hospital administrators. And so by the time you finally get to the doctor or the nurse or the person who's actually going to see somebody, a lot of that money has disappeared along the way. That's the point you think's not being addressed, right?
Correct, Dick. I think that is accurate. I have, you know, friends that are physicians, and their actual reimbursement is less for the same procedures they were doing years ago. So the cost is getting absorbed somewhere in the system, and there are four or five steps in there. Not everybody's aware of them, but I believe from what I see, that's where the problem's occurring, and until the national agenda addresses where the money is going, rather than, you know, health care is a lump sum, more money is better, and that isn't what's happening.
Right. Now, both parties are saying the same thing on one level here. They're saying to small businessmen like you, Tom, oh, you just need to get together with a bunch of other people, pool your resources, build up some negotiating muscle, and then you'll get better rates, better coverage. Is that realistic?
Funny you should mention that. The Chamber of Commerce functions somewhat in that as an aggregate for people, and I can't join. I'm a member of the chamber, but I'm not allowed to join the chamber program because I have the same insurer and I would get a lower rate, but they won't let me switch. So it's kind of a lockout and I have an interesting dilemma. And we can't really afford to be without medical care, so Right. We have to buy this, what amounts to catastrophic coverage. But what we're really paying is insurance company to give us negotiated rates when we do have to pay. It's kind of a reverse auction situation.
I can see you scratching your head over this with the accountants. I'm wondering whether or not in the shop this is something that the workers talk about, that you're talking to the workers about, this how do we maintain health insurance and how important is that to, you know, the average people who are working for you?
Good question. I have a lot of employees that have been there 10, 15, 20 years. We share everything with everybody. We sit down and we say, here's the rates, here's the plans, here's the options. And we have a couple of people who, one person in particular, that 5 years ago had a prostate cancer situation, and he's fine now. But if we switched coverage to another firm, he'd be dropped out. And we all as a group agreed we don't want to leave anybody out. So we're all paying the price in our coverage by taking decreased coverage and increased costs, so that we can stay covered as a group, and yet we're excluded from joining groups like the Chamber because of the way the insurance is set up. But everybody at my company is fully aware of all the costs, what they pay, what it costs the company. That's the only way I know how to run a business.
Tom, I want you to hang on for just half a second. I'd like to bring Michael Spare into the conversation. He's joining us from the NPR studio in New York City. Michael works as an associate professor of health policy at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
You've been listening to Tom describe the circumstances as he finds it, the preoccupation that he and his workers have with this. I want you to help me understand something. Healthcare was supposed to be a crisis back in 1992. That's when, you know, Clinton was talking and never stopped talking about healthcare. Here we are, you know, 2004, and it seems we're talking politically, it's being talked about even less. I don't understand what I'm missing here.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've been talking about healthcare as a crisis in America for a long, long time. I think, and the Clinton initiative obviously went down to a dismal defeat. We had the rise of managed care, which was viewed as a private sector initiative to solve the problems of the healthcare system. And now we're in a new era. I mean, I think, you know, the points that Tom was making were extremely good ones. I mean, healthcare costs are rising dramatically, particularly for small businesses and individuals, although for large businesses as well. I mean, we're now spending, you know, $1.6 trillion, or 15% of our gross domestic product on healthcare. And it's because there are lots of reasons why it's going up, and we can talk about that. But one result is Large employers and small employers are cutting back some of the coverage they offer, as Tom said, shifting to high deductible catastrophic plans because that's all they can afford. And at the same time, the number of uninsured is rising dramatically. So I think the problem is costs are rising, employers are cutting coverage, states and the federal government are in budget crises, we have rising numbers of uninsured, and the question is, what do we do about it? Where do we go from here?
I want you to speak to the point that Tom made about what we're not hearing in the campaign. Tom makes the point that, you know, basically the Democrats are saying, you know, here's how I'd pay for what we're not getting. Here's where the money would come from, and here's where we'd put it. And the Republicans are finding a different way of saying much the same sort of thing. And Tom's banging his fist on the desk in Toledo and Indianapolis saying, no, fix the way the system works. Fix the way the money is being spent, and then you're going to get close to the problem. Has he got something?
Well, sure. I mean, there clearly are significant administrative costs in the system, particularly for small businesses and individuals who want to buy health insurance on their own. It's at the same time, there's lots of reasons why healthcare costs are rising dramatically. I mean, we've got new technology all the time. We've got increased reimbursement, perhaps not for many doctors, but certainly for hospitals and large institutions. We have managed care companies retreating from some of their cost containment initiatives, perhaps for the better, but retreating from them. We have rising prescription drug costs. We have a growing number of, you know, baby boomers beginning to age and long-term care costs and disabled and so on and so forth. And we have high administrative costs. So there's no question, as Tom points out, there's lots of reasons why costs are going up. You know, the question, as I said again, is what do we do about it? And there really are, you know, you can focus on the uninsured. And so far, that has not been, I mean, Kerry has tried a little bit, but it's not really been a major focus of the campaign. And as you pointed out in your introduction, Kerry and Bush do offer fundamentally different philosophical approaches to both the issue of how you restrain costs and the issue of what do you do about the uninsured. We could not have a starker choice in this campaign, but I think Tom's point that he hasn't seen it so far is illustrative of the fact that healthcare has not gotten the play in the political arena so far that I think it deserves. Because on this issue, I mean, it may be difficult at times to tell where Bush and Kerry differ on Iraq. It may be difficult at times to tell where they differ on terrorism. It is not at all difficult to tell how they differ on what we should do about healthcare. And they have dramatically different approaches to this. And I think those different approaches ought to be illustrated and talked about a lot more than they are right now.
And so, Tom Volk, how do we get the politicians to talk more about things that matter to you and your employees?
That's obviously the challenge. I mean, Michael brings up obviously good points also in the broader view of focusing on the uninsured. What I see happening is that the middle class, my group of people, we're moving toward being the uninsured. Right now, we're underinsured compared to where we were 4 or 5 years ago while costs are rising. And when I talk to my providers about why my costs are going up and the large cost company costs aren't, they're basically saying we're putting more costs on the small people because we can.
Connection listeners, are the candidates serious about fixing health care? What do you think are the answers? Is anybody addressing the issues that are specific to your family, your pocketbook? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. With us on the program today, Tom Volk. He's a business owner, joining us from a studio in Indianapolis. Michael Sperr is Associate Professor of Health Policy at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University. He makes the point that thus far in the campaign, the concentration has been on the circumstances facing those who are without health insurance. And granted, their circumstances are dire indeed. There is, though, a large number of people who are finding that their premiums are going up, the quality of the coverage is going down. So we're testing the waters on health care here, trying to find out how you view it as a campaign issue. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. To Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, Sonny is up first. Hi, Sonny.
Hi. You know, I have a unique perspective to bring to this, at least one that hasn't been talked about so far, and that is to consider the fact that health care is not a fundamental right. You know, for instance, in my situation, my company pays an exorbitant amount of money for my health care, and I pay an exorbitant amount of money, I feel, for my health care, and I don't even receive any benefit from that until I've spent $1,000 in addition to what I've already spent to cover my deductible before they start paying 80%.
So what's your point? Do away with insurance altogether?
No. My point is that to look at it from a different perspective, and, you know, for instance, I'll go into a doctor's office and sit next to a Medicaid patient who's paying $3 for the service that I'm paying $150 for after I've already paid my insurance deductible. And I think that the callers, the guests that you have touched on some of the issues, that there's a great deal of waste that's happening within the healthcare system itself, and I don't think that waste would be addressed by just simply going to a universal healthcare system that's paid universally by the government. I think it would contribute to the waste more than it would help.
So, simple question, Sonny, what do you do about someone who can't afford health care insurance?
Well, you know, that's a fundamental question that has to be addressed.
Okay, but if you're going to say it's not a right, you're going to have to give us some idea of how you deal with that question, because that's where you'll end up.
I know, and that's something that we have to decide together. But, you know, the same question could be applied to someone who can't afford housing or someone who can't afford food. You know, these are all fundamental needs that we have as people, and I think they should be addressed in similar ways.
Tom Volk, you hand out a paycheck to your employees every 2 weeks or once a month, and the people who take those checks make a decision. They're going to spend the money on rent or on mortgage or on food or and health care is a part of that. When you listen to Sonny saying that really it should be just one of those lists of choices that people have, those decisions people have to make, what's your feeling about that?
The problem with that is that when you're young and healthy, you'd go spend it on a bigger car payment. But when you get into where you're going to start consuming health care, you need it. You need the health care. So I think everybody should have it to some degree, and that's my company's. Everybody has health care, unless their spouse has it and they opt out. But I do think it's a little different than housing or cars or something. But the issue is difficult to figure out. But as an employer, part of the package I provide includes health care. I think that's important for our country.
We're going to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, for our next call. Jane is joining us on the phone from there. Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. I gather Jane is not your real name. You prefer not to use your first name?
Well, here's why I prefer not to use my real name. I currently have no health insurance. I'm in between. I'm 50 years old. I'm in between jobs, and hopefully very soon I'm going to be able to get health insurance. But in the meantime, I've got a lump in my breast that I've had for a while now, and I'm so terrified at the idea of insurance companies or a potential insurance company even finding out about it as a pre-existing condition, because it seems like all they focus on are reasons to exclude people, that I'm not saying anything about it to anybody, including my own doctor, because it just is, you know, it's just terrifying. I worry that because I'm a middle-income person, and I don't have health insurance, that ultimately, if something catastrophic were to happen, like if this turned out to be breast cancer and I didn't have health insurance, that my family would wind up losing everything. It's just, I just can't believe that in this day and age, with this country being as economically vital as it seems to be, that we would have citizens of the United States living like this. So it's just an outrage to me.
Let me be clear about this, Jane. You're looking for work, but your priority is going to be somebody who's going to offer you some kind of health care insurance. And until that happens, you're not even going to a doctor or talking to anyone about this lump that you know is in your breast, right?
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
Michael Spera, is a part of I don't know how you respond to that. It's a situation that nobody should have to face.
That's an extraordinarily sad and horrendous situation that Jane finds herself in, and it's not completely atypical of what's going on in this country. I mean, you played at the very beginning of the show a clip from Senator Kerry talking about, in his view, health care should be a right of citizenship, although clearly at this point it is not. And I think what we've heard from both Sonny and from Jane is the concern of small business owners and individuals who are middle class. You know, there are about 44 million people who don't have health insurance right now. There's probably double that number who over the course of a couple of years don't have health insurance. And 80%, or over 80%, 82, 83% of the uninsured are in families where somebody's working. Most people are working full-time in those families and sometimes part-time workers. So you've got large numbers of working-class and middle-class folks who are in situations where they can't afford health insurance. Sonny and Jane find themselves in very difficult situations. I mean, Tom, you know, is to be commended in his companies in Ohio for providing health insurance to his employees. But many small business owners find they can't. And when someone like Jane goes out on the individual market, if that's what she's going to do, goes out to just buy health insurance on the individual market, they're going to underwrite. They're going to try to estimate what the costs of her care are. And she is exactly right to be a bit scared here. So it's difficult. And I think until and unless the country says health care is a right, we're going to continue to have Tom paying way more than he should for his employees, Sonny paying a lot more for not so good health care, and Jane in the situation that she's in.
Sonny, let me just come back to you. How do you make the case to Jane, knowing her story as you do now, that there isn't some right to some certain basic level of care?
Well, you know, I wouldn't make the case that there's not some right to some basic level of care. You know, just like there's not some right to some basic level of you know, dignity in human housing or in you know, with food, for instance. And I think that all of us kind of find ourselves talking a little bit in a circle because it's such a perplexing problem that we face. And what I would suggest is that maybe there's some kind of catastrophic care offered as a universal right for someone like Jane, who finds herself in, you know, without any coverage and the possibility of a life-changing or a healthcare event. But not to the point where, you know, if you get a cough, all of a sudden you need to run into the doctor and expect not to have to pay a dime for the service that you're actually receiving, you know, which is where it really is for a lot of the government-sponsored programs at this point. And that's the frustration that I bring to the call.
Jane, what about the idea that the government would stand up for you on something catastrophic, like a discovery of breast cancer when you don't have insurance? I know that's one element of Kerry's campaign, but rather than making it political, you know, completely political, is that an answer that works or not?
Well, I think that would certainly be a good start, but this is just such a huge issue, and I think that, I mean, virtually every single person that I know, you know, when I get together with people in my field and we talk, and then the people that we work with, because I'm a social worker, it's just a huge, enormous concern for virtually every single family that I know. You know, if they have children, if they have teenagers, if they're on their own, everyone worries about going to the doctor, about affording the prescriptions that are written for them. I mean, I see people making choices all the time, and I'm frankly appalled that it's not, you know, right up there at the top of everyone's list. It just is an outrage to me, and I hope that this next election is going to provide us with a real working remedy to this issue.
Is it going to be the one thing that you use to make up your mind in November?
It's up at the very top of the list. It's not the top thing, because
yeah,
I think that there's, you know, there's larger global concerns than you know, what I'm dealing with myself. But because of my own experience, and then also because of the people that I work alongside, you know, in the field that I'm in, I really appreciate that John Kerry, that it's on John Kerry's radar screen in the way that it is. And I think that, you know, sort of the general consensus amongst the people that I know is that, you know, Bush's plan for health care is don't get sick. And that's just completely, completely detached from anything realistic.
Well, Jane, our best wishes for you. Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much.
Michael, you wanted to jump in here.
I was going to say that the issue or the problem with simply having a catastrophic health care policy for someone like Jane or for any of us,
yeah,
is that what we really need to be doing is emphasizing primary and preventive care. We need to be getting people into the medical system early to deal with problems before they become hugely expensive. I mean, if someone is hit by a car, they can go to the emergency room of a hospital, and they'll get some catastrophic care there. They may be bankrupted as a result of it, but they'll get some care. What we need is a system in which people feel they can get basic primary and preventive health care, a system in which people don't feel afraid that they're going to get sick, a system in which people can feel as if they can afford health care. And I do think, you know, and it's interesting, even so far today, we haven't really gotten into, and I understand why, but there are dramatic differences between the way Kerry and Bush are talking about how you constrain health care costs, and yet sometimes I think when you get into the details of it, you lose the sort of the political punch. And yet, without getting into the details and without getting into the broad philosophical differences between the candidates, it's hard to really move and make progress, I think.
And Tom, from your perspective as an employer, one of the things about this idea of catastrophic coverage is Kerry saying, all right, if the government were to take care of that, your obligation as an employer would be to lower the cost of insurance for employees. Is that a balance that you can see would be doable?
I'm afraid I'm not familiar with that proposal from Kerry, but I there's not much more as an employer I can do. Where, you know, we've all taken pay cuts to keep them, literally taken pay cuts to meet the medical premiums while getting decreased coverage. And I think Jane is a perfect person. I mean, there's empathy and sympathy for this health care problem. And we can all have sympathy for Jane, those of us with insurance. But if you don't have insurance, Jane's making life decisions on career, job, and everything based on insurance.
Yeah.
And that seems like a bad value for America to put somebody in that position. And yet, it seems like we're spending enough money on of our GDP on medical. We need to look at where it's going. I've said that before. I think we have enough money going into the system. We just need to focus it on actual patient care.
I'd like to bring Linda Claymola into the conversation. She has been listening along since the beginning. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
You're trained as a medical lab technologist. Is that right?
Right.
Let me just go back a bit here. You had health insurance up until last month?
No, last October.
Okay, so you lost your job in October.
Right.
Lost your insurance, got it back for a little bit, but then lost it again?
Well, I lost my insurance when I, of course, when I was laid off. I had some insurance under unemployment.
Oh, right, okay.
Okay, for a while. That ended just recently. So basically, I'm uninsured right now.
And have you got health issues that you're trying to cope with at the same time?
Yeah, I do. It just seems I'm as confused and confounded as anyone over the health care issue, and I'm facing the full brunt of that issue right now and never expected to. Tom said something that interested me when he said that the middle class is moving toward uninsured, and that's exactly what I feel that I've done and never expected to be in this position in life. And suddenly I have issues now and no insurance.
Linda, you're, what, 60 years old now?
I just turned 60.
This is your time to wind down. This is your time to put your
feet
up.
Right, and I'm in, like, full gear mentally and emotionally, thinking, oh, my God, where's my life going? What am I going to do? How am I going to do this? How am I going to survive it?
How do you pay for your health treatments now?
Out of my pocket. Just recently, I have a disease called post-polio syndrome, which has become very obvious in the last 2 years. I got diagnosed 2 years ago, and over the past year, it has gotten increasingly worse and worse. It's a degenerative disease, mm-hmm. and it's just going to keep getting worse.
But you have to keep working in order to get the money together?
I just got accepted onto disability. However, they limit how much you work. I can't work 40 hours anymore. My body just won't let me. But I don't want to sit home and feel sorry for myself either. And I really do have to have more than disability coming in order to survive. For example, last week I worked my per diem job. I work a little per diem job, which I've had for 6 years.
Like a part-time job, right?
Right. It's an on-call basis type of thing. And they call me when they need me, and I've always kept that job. And last week I netted, not gross, because everybody seems to go by the gross, but I netted $220 and paid out almost $200 to get prescriptions filled. So that's how I'm living right now. I can't see my doctor because to walk in the door would be a good $100 bill right there.
So when you watch television and see an ad from one of the political leaders talking about health care being a priority. Is anybody talking about what's important to you?
They're talking about health care, which is important to me, but that seems to be all that's happening is the talk. It doesn't seem to be on the, because there are so many issues in the world, too. Everybody uses health care. I feel that I've become disenchanted with politicians because of this. They seem to use health care to get votes, but I don't see that anything's really being done. It seems like health care takes a back burner to all the other issues that are out there, and now it's gotten to a point where it's become critical. There are a lot of people in worse shape than me, I'm sure. When I was in the medical field, I saw elderly leaving the doctor's office crying and would ask them, why, what's wrong? It's because the doctor had given them yet another prescription, and they couldn't fill it. They had so many prescriptions they were paying for, they had to decide what to let go and what to keep, what was going to be life-threatening for them to let go, what they could get away with not taking. I play that game now with my pills, my blood pressure pills. I don't take them every single day because I'm trying to stretch out the use of them. So,
Linda, I want to thank you for being with us on the program. You've given us some real insight into some of the difficult decisions people are having to make.
Okay, thank you.
That's Linda Claymola joining us on the phone. They're from Georgetown, Massachusetts. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We've heard a lot so far in the first part of this program about the way that healthcare issues are not just for those who are dealing without insurance, but those who are wondering where their insurance is going to come from, those people who are making decisions about their very employment based on their own age, their healthcare prospect, rather than what they can and should be doing at the workplace. So we'd like to hear from you about whether or not the issue of healthcare is getting the attention and the specific kind of language that you want to hear in this campaign. Our number is 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Lots of information available from both the Democrats and the Republicans on exactly what it is they're proposing for health care. In a nutshell, John Kerry talking about spending $650 billion over 10 years to restore health insurance to a good number of the 43 million people in this country who do not have it, planning on taking a bunch of that money by rolling back the tax cuts announced by the president, tax cuts on capital gains, dividends, estate insurance as well. Basically, the principle to preserve and strengthen government's role. George Bush, on the other hand, talking about not $650 billion, but $90 billion over 10 years to restore health insurance to 2 to 3 million of those who don't have it, but talking about continuing the tax cuts, allowing the market and the engine of the economy to generate enough money so people with their own health care savings account and their own tax credits can manage their own health care. The philosophy of that government only as a last resort for those in most dire need. The two philosophical differences that Michael Sparrow was talking about earlier in the program. And Michael, I want to ask you if I can to address something that Linda touched on. Linda and Tom have both spoken about how it's becoming increasingly difficult to separate healthcare as an issue from everything else that makes up, you know, the economic issues that we use to decide which party, which leader would best represent the interests of the country in November. Are the two now so linked that you can't separate them, healthcare and the economy?
I think healthcare is certainly a critical part of the economy. There's no question about that. I mean, it's a huge part of the national economy, and it's a huge part of as consumers, our everyday lives, and the cost is extraordinary. I think more and more folks, as Tom and Linda have pointed out, more and more folks find themselves at risk of being uninsured right now. I think it's interesting, Linda And you described the Carey plan, but Linda, under the Carey plan, would be entitled to federal health care coverage. I mean, Carey is talking about really a three-point plan, expanding dramatically public insurance coverage, allowing people to join a federal, what he calls the congressional health plan, so allowing people to join this large federal pool. And his third point is to try to have the federal government pay 75% of all the costs over $50,000 on the theory that that will reduce health care costs. So that's his plan. As you point out, Bush has a very different market-based initiative. Neither of them, though, I think has effectively yet in the campaign been able to turn the health care issue into a political plus for themselves. I think Kerry is a little nervous. I mean, Kerry, on the one hand, he talks about health care as a right. He talks about dramatic expansions. He talks about $650 billion. On the other hand, Kerry is very mindful of the Clinton experience back in 92, 93. Kerry is very concerned about being painted as a sort of a liberal, you know, tax-spending senator from Massachusetts.
Right.
So he's walking a very fine line there. So he wants to talk about the economy and he wants to talk about health care.
So the bizarre twist of this is that in an ideal political world, not necessarily what's best for the people, neither of the parties would actually have this as front and center because there's too much risk attached to it for both the Democrats and the Republicans.
Well, there clearly is risk attached for both of them, yeah. There's no question about that. For Kerry, the risk is being painted as a tax-spending liberal. And I think for Kerry, the risk is also being painted as someone who, you know, when he talks about cutting, rescinding tax credits for those with the income over $200,000, Bush tries to paint that as a tax increase on folks. So Kerry's concerned about being painted as a tax and spend liberal. And Bush, I think, is concerned, too. It's an issue and a problem for Bush because he's basically saying, let the market take care of it. Let's have these tax credits. Let's have health savings accounts. Let's build up a few community health centers.
Right.
Let's not spend much money. As you point out, government is a last resort. And yet the problem is getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And so you have people like Sonny and Jane and Linda and Tom calling concerned, anxious, worried. And concerned, anxious, worried voters are not good for Bush at this point, particularly with his plan. So I think for both Kerry and Bush, health care is an opportunity, but it's a risk. Kerry, I think, is pushing it a little bit more, but cautiously. Bush, I think, would like to basically say, I passed the Medicare bill last year. That's going to turn out to be great. Let the market take care of the rest, and I'm doing a good job on terrorism. I mean, I think he'd like to avoid a more detailed conversation about health care.
Tom Volk, let me ask you just to slip on your businessman's hat for this one. When the president talks about using tax cuts to provide energy for the economy, to give a push to the economy. I mean, can it work? Can the market provide some of the answers to the questions that we're posing here?
Thanks for asking the question. Yeah, I think it can. But I also agree with Michael that it's a no-win political discussion for the Democrats and the Republicans. There is no easy answer. You know, you can't just promise free goods and it doesn't work. But giving incentives is fine-tuning something that, you know, that just isn't working. The whole system of health care providing isn't working. We're spending more and getting less. So I don't know how to change the discussion, but on a political level, I don't know how it can be brought up. But we're looking at the health savings accounts and we're trying to figure out how it fits in with the rest of our benefits. And right now it's not even clear with our Section 125 and some other things we offer the employees. There's not even a clear legal position on what we can and cannot do with it. So that's a nice concept, but it isn't working yet.
So if this was a car engine, there's this talk of changing the plugs and the oil's not going to work. We need a new engine.
Yeah, we really need to change, you know, my opinion, we need to change the basis of the discussion to talk about. In business over the last 10 years, the challenge to my companies and everybody's has been, okay, this is all the market's going to pay for this. Now figure out how to deliver it at that cost.
Right.
And companies that have been successful are doing that. The healthcare and public healthcare policy has not enabled that framework of discussion. So if we go with what I heard Kerry's plan of anything over $50,000 is paid by the government, you can bet that every claim will be $50,000 plus. That's just how the free market works. So I don't think either approach of totally leaving it to the free market,
right,
or just having a government works.
1-800-423-8255 to Clemson, South Carolina. Eric's on the line. Hi, Eric.
How are you doing, Mr. Good?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling. What's up?
I wanted to call in. I can definitely relate to some of the things that all of your callers have been saying today. I'm a graduate student, and since I'm independent, you know, I'm responsible for my own health care now. I can't be covered as a dependent. and I'm uninsured also. But what I see the problem being is that both candidates, Bush and Kerry, are seeing high health care prices as the problem and not as a symptom of the problem. And to me, the answer is to control the health care costs at their source. And one of the main things to do that is to find a way to offset these the high malpractice insurance costs and the way that people just bill Medicare and bill whatever insurance company for as much as it can hold. If the government, either through Kerry's plan by expressly picking up the check or through Bush's plan by using government money, you know, in a roundabout way, along with private money to pay for these health care costs, the result's the same. It's a piggy bank that you can stick your hand into, you know, a cookie jar, anytime you want to. And so I think that the real solution is to lower health care costs by lowering the cost of doctors and hospitals to do business, by lowering, you know, these awards that people get for suing for profit. And I see that.
Eric, if health insurance was a lot cheaper, would you bother setting aside the money for it now? Would you pay for it?
Yes, I would, because I look at you know, Joan's situation, and you know, my thoughts and prayers are with her. I hate the idea that anybody's put in a position like that, and I think that the only solution is, I can't remember which caller or guest was talking about it, but is to look at healthcare as a long-term issue and start when you're young, and not necessarily wait until you're approaching middle age. Or you actually need health care, but have it in place before you need it.
The idea being that you might not be able to get it if you waited until you were 40 or 45 or 50 years old.
Well, you know, unfortunately, that's exactly how it is, because while, you know, some doctors and hospitals are certainly in the business to do good, you know, they need to make money. They have to pay their bills too. And you know, if you don't make if you're not a good risk for them, then they're, you know, probably not going to offer you insurance when you get older.
Eric, I thank you for your call.
Thank you, Mr. Wood.
Next to Boston, John's on the line. John.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to call and let you know, I work with healthcare companies around the nation, turning them around when they're in financial difficulty. And the problem that we're really talking about is our healthcare problem is multifaceted. It ranges from our consumers who demand more and more, want to pay less and less, to our healthcare providers who are wasting a lot of money, to our insurance companies who don't even keep track of the total premiums that they, or total amounts that they pay out on fixed premium policies. And so one of your commenters had a good point. We really need to change the basis of the discussion. The system isn't broke. We have 44 million people uninsured today. You know, that number 10 years ago when I was talking about this was 40 million. Our nation is growing. We have the most people covered under health insurance now than we ever have as a nation. The question isn't that it's getting out of control. The question is how do we get more or a larger part of our population covered? And we need to look at the pieces of why certain people aren't covered. There's a large segment.
Hang on, John. John, just on the issue of is the situation worse or better, what Tom was telling us at the beginning of the program, not only is he and are his employees paying a lot more for the coverage that they're getting, but the coverage that they're getting is a lot thinner. Their co-payments are way up. It might be a share. There's a $1,000 deductible that Sonny was talking about. I mean, that's not necessarily a sign of a healthy system, is it?
Well, there's a couple things that are driving that. One is employers are standing back, maybe not Tom's company, but we have certain employers that I advise is to raise the copay on certain services, because people keep accessing the system at will, because the money isn't coming out of their pockets. And so immediately they're going to get coverage for services that maybe aren't necessary, or they could get those services provided in a more cost-effective manner. 5 years ago, I broke a rib playing hockey, and I tried to go and just get an x-ray to see, is the rib broken or not? Because there wasn't much that could be done for it if it was broken. I had to go through a long, lengthy process with my insurance company to avoid my primary care doc and just go get the x-ray. When I explained the situation, what I did, they let me go through. I had a broken rib, and the doctor said, there's nothing you can do. Just be easy with it and don't play hockey again for a while. And so, you know, we've got some inefficiencies in the system as a whole.
Let me just stop you for half a second here, John. I want to go back to Tom here, because Tom talks about having these conversations on a regular basis with his own employees. And Tom is part of that. talking to people about not necessarily making undue use of the healthcare system? Is that a part of the conversation?
We crossed that threshold about 4 years ago, where we're not going, we're barely going for necessity things. Again, keeping everybody informed and involved in this because it's a company money and their money. That certainly, when everything's free and no marginal cost, they go for coverage. But it's been 4 or 5 years since we've been in that boat, so our people are very conscious of that. And I think that's more people are. I don't know that that's the big savings that it might have been 4 or 5 years ago in the system.
What, Michael Spare, is the tipping point? I've heard people describe the danger arriving as something of a brownout, like when everything just starts to come down like a house of cards in slow motion. I mean, what's the signal for you that it's just not enough action, too much talk?
I don't think there is a single tipping point. I think, you know, this problem, you know, ebbs and flows. In the late 90s, early 2000s, for a variety of reasons, the number of uninsured began to decline. In the early 2000s, for a variety of reasons, including a poor economy and declines in employer coverage, etc., the number of uninsured is rising and costs are rising. I think this is an ongoing issue. It's an ongoing problem. And let me just make two quick points about some of the comments of the
We're
callers.
Tight for time, so I'll ask you to be brief.
Okay. Well, I'll cut it down to one.
Okay.
At the end of the day, I think the key issue is a philosophical decision. You know, in other countries, many other countries around the world, there's a perception that healthcare is a right, that the young should pay for the old, that the healthy should pay for the sick, because someday we're going to be old and someday we're going to be sick. In this nation, we've had much more of an individualistic philosophy. We've never adopted that approach. And we've got a fragmented, decentralized system that the last caller talked about. You know, the classic example in our situation is the balloon. You pop it one place and it pops out the other. So we've got a fragmented system that's in trouble, but I don't think it's, I don't think there's a tipping point. I don't think there is a point at which it's going to fall apart.
Michael, I thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Michael Spare is Associate Professor of Health Policy at Columbia University. Tom Volk, thanks a lot for your time. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being on, Dick.
Tom is owner of Ohio Belting and Transmission in Toledo, Ohio, and Racer Parts Wholesale in Indianapolis, Indiana. Linda Claymola was with us earlier on the program. The Connection is produced by Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenelosa, Kelly Jones, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugars. Tara Murphy is our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.